Blog Talk Radio.
Take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Butchering Rice. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer. My co-host is poultry advocate and author Pat Foreman. Today is Wednesday, September 22nd, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. You can follow the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer radio show 24 hours a day at our website, chickenwhisperer.com. That's chickenwhisperer.com. From there, you can follow us on Twitter, become a fan on Facebook, visit our blog, sign up for our monthly e-newsletter, The Chicken Scratch, and get all kinds of great Chicken Whisperer gear. If you're listening live today on Blog Talk Radio, I invite you to join us in the live chicken chat room that's going on right now. You can talk with other backyard poultry with the Chicken Whisperer fans and other chicken owners from around the country. You can also ask any questions you may have for our special guests when we have them on. All you have to do is click on the Chat Now button there at our homepage at Blog Talk Radio. Take a moment to register. That'll get you your own unique, fun, and creative screen name. Then you can come on in, sit a spell, have a great time, and talk all about backyard poultry, show poultry, and sustainable living. I would also invite you to mark this radio show as a favorite and request to be on our friends list while you're there at Blog Talk Radio. We hope you'll take a moment to do this today. And again, I want to thank you all for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by ManaPro. ManaPro is committed to providing the best quality products that your animals deserve at a value you can appreciate. No matter the animal, no matter the product, you can be certain that ManaPro cares as much about the well-being of your flock as you do. So try one of the many poultry products offered at a retailer near you. ManaPro, nurturing life.
Established in 1957, GQF has become the name to trust when it comes to quality products and superior customer service. GQF offers a wide range of poultry products, including incubators, brooders, feeders, waters, and much, much more. Give them a call at 912-236-0651. Or visit them online at GQFradio.com. That's GQFradio.com.
McMurray Hatchery is the world's oldest and largest rare breed hatchery. They have been providing their customers quality poultry since 1917 and have more than 110 different breeds to choose from. Be sure to sign up for their weekly special email at McMurrayHatchery.com and receive a $5 internet exclusive coupon to use on your first internet order. McMurray Hatchery, the world's largest and oldest rare breed hatchery.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim,
navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
If you have experienced the disappointment of broken or weak eggshells, try MannaPro's Oyster Shell. Adding oyster shell to your flock's feeding program helps provide the calcium they need for strong eggshells. So don't let those beautiful eggs go to waste. Try MannaPro's Oyster Shell for your pullets and layers.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com. That's mthealthy.com. Or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer, here to tell you that if you have backyard poultry, nothing is more important than making sure your feathered friends are safe from infectious poultry diseases. Learn the simple steps to keep your birds healthy by visiting this website, healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov. That's healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov.
A message from the USDA.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty. Thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. It is good to be back. I miss all and every single one of you. With my wonderful co-host, author and poultry advocate, Pat Foreman. Hey, Pat, it's good to be back, isn't it?
Yeah, hey, Whisper, indeed, it is good to be back. Can you hear me okay? Can we get a sound check? Because you're coming in a little staccato to me.
Okay, we'll get a sound check in the chat room. Everybody in the chat room, if you'll just let us know how we're coming through today. That includes both Pat and I, and we will continue.
Clear. Yeah, great. Okay. My goodness, it seems like an age and a half since we were on the talk show, doesn't it? I mean, that time, so much has happened in such a rich time. The big question is, did you get your writing done? How'd you do with that?
I did pretty good, and I want to say we completed two full chapters, but there's, you know, after editing, we'll go back. There'll be things that I want to add that. Oh, I want to add this. Oh, I need to do this. I need to do that. But for the most part, yes, we got two clear chapters, and we're on. Still continuing on. I started another one as well, so getting that done. But it's quite the challenge, as you know, being a accomplished author of many, 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 many books. And so, it has been quite the challenge. But I can just tell you that more than likely we won't be doing this again as far as canceling the show to get writing done. We did have to, since we wanted to meet this particular deadline, we went ahead and made the decision to do that, but I do not foresee that ever happening again in the future. So we are back on the air here to stay because people rely on the show for good backyard poultry, show poultry, and sustainable lifestyle information. It's a part of their life. It's a part of their daily routine. And the emails that I got really reassured me of that, people saying, well, I'm pulling my hair out. And, you know, I missed this, or, I had people like, you know, I really didn't think I would miss the radio show all that much, but it's really a void in my daily routine now. So everybody who sent emails and missing messages and things like that, missing you, this and that, I appreciate it. We really appreciate all your support as well. But we are back and here to stay. We had a wonderful, wonderful, really just no business at all type of weekend from about Friday at 3 p.m. until Sunday about 7 p.m. We went down to the little farmhouse and had a great relaxing weekend. Yeah, so we definitely needed that. It was very, very relaxing. Saw some great friends at the church, great neighbors that we haven't seen in a long, long time. So we had a really good weekend that was very much so needed by both Jen and myself. So that was kind of a relaxing little 2.5 days that we definitely needed. And then we came back Monday and Tuesday and hit the keyboard again. So how about yourself? What did you do for about 6-7 days?
I feel like I'm Alice in Wonderland in a way, because as you know, I went to the with Richard Frudenberger, then the back home booth, went to the Pennsylvania Renewable Energy and Sustainable Lifestyles Festival. It was a 3-day festival up there, and I just had a blast. I mean, besides Richard is so interesting, and I learned all about the sort of the conversion from Mother Earth News over to back home. But also just there were so many booths. I learned a lot about the solar hot water, which is what I want to do with my house when I'm able to remodel it. And there was an incredible movie there. I love this movie, and it ought to be in the libraries, but it's called The Age of Stupid. The Age of Stupid. And I hate to say it, but yes, folks, that's us, The Age of Stupid. And they went into saying about how the climate changes. Yes, comments there, Whisper? Go ahead.
I think that I probably know a few of the stars of that movie.
Well, the stars are the human race of the movie, and how we're so caught into our oil addiction and then the climate change, and we're not doing anything nearly soon enough to stop it. And they were saying that we're almost near the point. Now, I'm not a fearmonger. Everybody knows that. I'm one of these eternal optimists. In fact, there was a bumper sticker there I almost bought about 10 of. The bumper sticker just said, it was a say no to negativity. Just say no to negativity. Oh, dear. But anyway, it's just about how with the escalating carbon dioxide levels, it's going to reach a tipping point where we won't be able to stop it. And that tipping point is not that far away, according to their models. And so it was a little dire, but on the other hand, it was inspiring, thinking that, you know, what you and I are doing with the back home poultry movement and supporting local food supplies and sustainable lifestyles is really part of the solution. And so it gave me the encouragement to just plow in even more and just keep going on it. I gave 3 talks while I was there. They were very well received. It really wasn't sort of a farming agriculture group. It was more the sustainable energy and a lot of them were market gardeners too, but they were more into the renewable energy part by far. And those presentations were really well received. It was really highly interested. And they had a new plug-in Prius there, which I wanted to test drive, but I didn't get a chance to. But that's really exciting about how you can just charge it off your solar panel or plug it into your wall and be able to get some mileage out of it. So I was thrilled to see that. So that was kind of my weekend, and then getting back and just taking care of details, getting stuff going. We had the Shenandoah Valley Poultry and Garden Club had our meeting on Monday. And coming up, anyone that's in the area, you're welcome to come join us. We're going to do a hands-on poultry processing clinic and a potluck dinner. And it's going to be on October 17th, 2010, October 17th. It's a Sunday. And just contact me or just come on in. So we're excited to go ahead because right now is when people are processing their roosters, which are all over the place, and it's just time to cut down for the winter. You know, carry your stock that you want to carry over for the winter. So that's coming up. And we're going to have more, so don't feel like this is the only one. But we have a gal that comes in from Manassas. She travels about 3.5 hours sometimes to attend our meeting. So welcome to come.
I love to put molasses on my biscuits. You said she's from Manassas. I love it on my biscuits.
Manassas. Manassas,
okay.
which Mon Assis, that's my ass in French. So Mon Assis, she drives it down here. Anyway, Mon Assis. So that was pretty much my weekend, and I've had my one cup a week coffee this morning, so I'm just as frisky as can be. People were making fun of me down at the co-op that I'd only let myself have one. Basically, it's cream with a little bit of coffee is what it is. But after the farmer's market, a few of us go over and just have sitting down and chew a while and just chat. So that was pretty much my weekend. And I met some wonderful, wonderful people, made some great contacts, got some incredible information about the solar panels and solar hot water. What was interesting, though, and I'd like to have someone maybe on the show about this, but there wasn't a vendor that was doing the, I have trouble with my S's, as you know, the solar shingles, which you can put up. They're actually shingles that have little micro circuits in them, and they look just like regular shingles, but they can generate electricity into a grid. So no one was there for that. So anyway, good.
I know that we had Richard Grootenberger on the show. We had Richard Grootenberger on the show, I don't know, a few months ago. Thought he did a whole show about solar shingles.
Yes, we did. That's right. That's right. Oh, and the other benefit I got, because I helped Richard work the booth, but they had all these back issues. Whisper, I mean, there was just a big wall of them. So when it wasn't busy, of course, what did I get to do but sit down and read the issues? Read all the articles from the back issues that I wanted to read. So I just was taking notes here and there, and I was just in hog heaven, I guess you'd say, with all those back issues and reading between the people coming up. So it was a wonderful weekend. Had an absolutely fabulous time and time off. It's too bad that we could have talked to a lot of really interesting people at the show, and I'd still like to get the organizer and the president on maybe to talk about the festival and how they're happening across the U.S. and how they feel that it's evolving. That would be a really good show time, I think. Maybe we can arrange that.
Sounds like a plan to me. Sounds like a plan to me. Arrange it. You know, you've got the kind of the monthly schedule,
the
days that we have available. Yeah, pretty much the second and fourth Tuesdays and every Friday are open right now. We've got a great show lined up for everybody today. It is Ask the Chicken Doctor with Peter Brown. Peter is the founder of First State Vet Supply. You can visit them at firststatevetsupply.com. And after this next break, we'll welcome him on. He's going to be talking all about avian gout today. That will be our topic.
My.
If you didn't, yeah, exactly. I, you know,
I didn't know chickens
like,
got gout.
So,
I'll be darned.
Yeah, so I'm gonna get your pen and paper out, folks, because you're going to hear it first right here on the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer radio show. That'll be after the next commercial break. But first, it is now time for Chickens in the News. And today's Chickens in the News segment is brought to you by Meyer Hatchery. Visit them online at meyerhatchery.com. Go there and get you some Rhode Island Reds, some Barred Rocks, Silver Lakes, Wyandottes, and all kinds of great backyard poultry birds. That's meyerhatchery.com. All righty, the first one here comes from the Statesman's Journal. The Statesman Journal, Oregon's Mid Willamette Valley, and this came just to us from the opinion. It wasn't any a writer or a journalist. I just wanted to read this to you from a comment that was made because they are discussing having backyard poultry in the backyard. So this comes to us from the opinion section, and it is say, chickens don't belong in city neighborhoods. Chickens don't belong in city neighborhoods. Chickens in the yard sounds like the wild-eyed teabag party at work. Okay, do you hear that? You ready for that? Yeah, believe it or not, you're hearing that from this gentleman's article. Chickens in the yard sounds like the wild-eyed teabag party at work. The city council is hearing from a noisy, persistent, organized few and being sold on their agenda. Few I talk to and none in our neighborhood wants chickens in their own yard or next door. What will the city do to prevent salmonella? All the chicken lovers could procure some acreage outside the city neighborhoods and have a communal chicken ranch. Then everyone is happy. Put this issue on the ballot to resolve it fairly once and for all. If not, how do you put it to rest? Jack Merriam from Salem. Now, the first, it talks about backyard poultry being a part of the teabag party And Jack, I can assure you, if you look at the backyard poultry folks, if you see what they're into, if you look at their interest, I assure you that that categorizing backyard poultry with the Tea Party is number one your first mistake, which automatically gives you no credibility at all. And I will share this story with you one more time. In a five-day period about a year ago, many of you have heard this, about a five-day period about a year ago, I had two newspaper interviews via phone. And I had one from a very liberal-minded newspaper, and then I had one from a very conservative-minded newspaper within 5 days of each other. And one newspaper was blaming, if you will, the backyard poultry movement on the left, or the liberals, if you will. They were making statements like, well, so our understanding is this big backyard poultry movement that's occurring right now is the it's the tree hugger, Prius driving liberals, organic food kind of, love everybody people. Now the other newspaper, less than 5 days later, within 5 days, I get another paper, and lo and behold, the reporter was blaming the other. He says, now, our understanding is that this backyard poultry movement is kind of the in-town, yuppie, BMW-driving, conservative, eccentric type of folks that are putting these fancy little coops behind their big fancy houses. And so at that point on, it occurred to me that it's basic, and I already knew this because of our meetup groups and the people who attend those, but they're – a lot of the media is trying to find somebody to blame for this, trying to who started this, what's the deal. And the bottom line is, based on even those two interviews and the people you see show up at our meetup groups, it's everybody. It's left, it's right, it's middle, it's Tea Party, it's this, that, and the other. It knows no – I mean, it's, and in fact, we included that in a chapter in our book, that, when we go to our meetup groups here in Atlanta – diverse and cultural city. When we go to the meetup groups, I'm telling you folks, it's amazing that when you see these folks, and a lot of times you know them personally, that outside of that little meeting room where we're getting together and talking about poultry, the two people sitting next to each other laughing, having a great time, sharing stories, have nothing in common but backyard poultry. When they walk out the front door of that restaurant when the meeting's over, one goes left, one goes right, no pun intended, and they go home and have nothing in common as far as their really daily routine except for backyard poultry that brings them together for a couple of hours every month or more, depending on how many events we have. And it's black, it's white, it's gay, it's straight, it's, fat, thin, tall, skinny, short. It's everybody when you come to our meetup groups. And then you sit there and you look at these folks having a great time, laughing, carrying on, talking about, sharing stories, sharing experiences. It's amazing. And so right off the bat, Jack, you've lost credibility there. It shows you have absolutely no idea what the heck you're talking about. And then he goes down and talks about what would the city do to prevent salmonella, which I absolutely just find hilarious if he wants to research. In fact, there was a big story out just a couple of weeks ago about humans being infected from salmonella from dog food, from dry dog food. So, Jack, what are you going to do about salmonella? Are you going to ban all the dogs in Salem? How about that? That'll clear some of the risk of getting salmonella. You're going to ban chicken in every single grocery store, my friend, that come from factory farms? That may do a little bit to eliminate all the salmonella. Do you want to where do we go from here? I mean,
salmonella is in everybody's guts. I mean, it's in our intestines already. We live with salmonella. It's impossible to eradicate it. So, but go ahead, Whisper. You're making a really good point.
It's everywhere. It's everywhere. Yeah, so again, chickens, again, Jack, Merriam, I'm not a name caller, my friend, but man, I've got a few for you. This is just absolutely – I mean, he's his own worst enemy in the way he wrote this chicken article to the letter to the editor. So, Jack Merriam in Salem, whatever. Talk to the hand. You have no clue what you're talking about. Okay, let's go on to the next chickens in the news. And speaking of Salem, Salem City okays backyard chickens. How about that, Jack? How you feeling, buddy? Okay. Salem, Oregon, comes to us from the AP. Chickens could be coming home to roost in Salem. The city council voted Monday to allow up to three hens. Oh, my gosh, what's the world coming to? Three hens in backyards. The ordinance advances to a final decision at the September 27th meeting. The Statesman Journal reports it's been nearly 2 years since chicken proponents first asked the council to allow backyard coops. The zoning issue has been before the council 11 times. Talk about taxpayer dollars and time wasted. Chicken owners would be required to pay money, 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 money. All about money and taxes and keeping these cities going. Chicken owners would be required to pay a $50 license fee. So let's see, there's marriage license, there's driver's license, there's building license, there's grading license, now there's a chicken license. How many other licenses can we actually have, local governments? I mean, currently get paid. You know what? Maybe, just maybe, you should think about having a requirement to have a license to have children. Boy, would that not solve a heck of a lot of problems in this nation. I mean, I'm telling you what, holy cow. So anyway, there you go. Congratulations to the folks out in Salem that have been working on this for over 2 years. And we hope on the 27th that it finally and officially goes through. And according to this, it looks like it will. We'll see when the news comes out after the 27th. And we will actually we will do that. So we'll keep you posted. But congratulations. Looks like this may actually go through. Let me see what else we have here. We'll do one more before we go to commercial break. It was one more. Oh, I love this story. Here's another one I wanted to share with everybody. This comes to us from the Evanston Review. The Evanston Review, and it was by Bob Seidenberg. Bob Seidenberg with the Evanston Review. Richard, his name has been changed to protect his innocence, shows off some eggs produced by his girls. The hens he keeps in the chicken coop in his South Evanston backyard. The coop sits a few feet away from a very healthy garden, bursting with vegetables thanks to the plentiful fertilizer his chickens produce. I have made an omelet, never having left my backyard, Richard said. I get the eggs, get the tomatoes, get the zucchinis, get the flat-top grill. I make an omelet right here in my backyard, he said, pointing to the grill. At least until Monday, though, Richard will have to be cautious about advertising the enterprise. Evanston City Council members are scheduled to vote at a regular city council meeting that night on an ordinance that would make the keeping of backyard chickens legal in Evanston. Keeping chickens in Evanston has been banned since 1974 when poultry placed in the same prohibited category as horses, mules, swine, sheep, goats, cattle, skunks, and even poisonous reptiles. Okay, great. It's good to know. I may have to move there knowing you can't have a rattlesnake in your house. Aldermen have swung back and forth on the chicken issue, and Monday is expected it's to be a close vote. In extensive hearings, some residents as well as the city's animal warden have raised concerns about sanitation, smells, spread of disease, and the possibility of the coops luring other predators such as coyotes. Members of Evanston's Backyard Chicken Committee, a group working for legalization of the keeping of chickens, have countered with their own testimony in support of legalization. And it talks about the local food movement, and it talks about learning things on the web about backyard poultry, securing the coop, the whole nine yards. And you can see all of our chickens in the news at our Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/thechickenwhisper, and a couple of just came across the wire now. Let's see if there's anything worth actually mentioning right away, and not as I can see. So what we're going to do is we're going to go to commercial break, Pat. I got your message that stated you didn't have chickens in the news today, so that's perfectly fine. We'll go to commercial. When we come back, folks, we're going to learn all about poultry or chicken gout with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, founder of First State Vet Supplies. So stay with us, folks. Get that pen and paper ready, by the way, because you're going to learn a lot during this segment, and we'll be back right after this short break.
First State Vet Supply is your one-stop shop to keep your birds healthy and happy. They have a wide selection of medications, vaccines, vitamins, wormers, and much more. Every product comes with specific directions and doses for your small backyard flock. Have questions about a sick or injured chicken? Take advantage of First State Vet Supplies' Ask the Chicken Doctor program. For just $25, you can have a personal phone consultation with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. The consultation fee is waived if you purchase a product from First State Vet Supply. Visit them online at firststatevetsupply.com. That's firststatevetsupply.com. It's easy and rewarding to keep backyard chickens, and My Pet Chicken can supply everything you need to get started, including baby chicks, chicken coops, accessories, books, and free how-to information, plus fun gifts and rooster decor. At My Pet Chicken, you can buy as few as 3 baby chicks. They also sell fertile hatching eggs. Visit them online at mypetchicken.com. That's mypetchicken.com. When you need an incubator, think Brinsey, the incubation specialists. Brinsey has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. They have incubators that hold anywhere from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. These durable, easy-to-clean, quality products come with a 2-year warranty and are the choice of backyard breeders through research establishments. Visit them online at Brinsea.com. Brinsea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brinsea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. And don't miss out on Brinsea's September sale. Until the end of the month, you can save 20% or more on their full range of incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brinsea. Technology you can trust. You have the chickens, the coop, and the run. But do you have the egg cartons? Don't put your beautiful farm fresh eggs in any old used grocery store egg carton. Impress your friends with your very own custom labeled egg cartons from eggcartons.com. They have a large selection of custom egg cartons, stamps, and labels to choose from. Pick out your new custom egg cartons at eggcartons.com. That's eggcartons.com.
This looks like a job for
Super Chicken.
You get the super sauce, I'll don my super suit.
All righty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. There's one more little bit of news I want to share with everybody. Time is running out to name the healthy bird. Yep, time is running out to name the healthy bird. The contest ends September 30th. Will the bird be named Sherlock Combs or Dr. Squawk? Or perhaps the clever rooster looks more like a Plucky Pete or a Larry the Lookout? The jury is still out on the name for the mascot for the Biosecurity for Birds campaign, but there is still time to submit suggestions for the name, the Healthy Bird Contest. Suggestions for names will be accepted through September 30th. A winner will be announced during the Healthy Bird Awareness Week, November 1st through 7th. So far, bird enthusiasts have been flocking to name the bird, offering many great names from which to choose. The robust rooster is one of the faces of the Biosecurity for Birds campaign, which offers tips and information to the growing number of backyard poultry owners on how to protect their birds from infectious poultry diseases. The contest is sponsored by the U.S. Department of Agriculture's USDA Animal Health and Plant Inspection Service. Contestants may submit their suggestions at healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov. Again, that's not www. Let me clarify. You need to go to http://, or I guess it's semicolon, healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov. That's http://, healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov. A panel of poultry enthusiasts and marketing experts will review the nominations and select three top choices that will then be placed on the Biosecurity for Birds website. Bird lovers will have 2 weeks to peep in and vote for their favorite name. The winning contestant will receive a deluxe duffel bag and will be interviewed and featured on the Biosecurity for Birds website, and we'll probably even have them on this radio show. Biosecurity for Birds is a public awareness campaign that seeks to educate both new and experienced backyard poultry owners about important steps to protect their flock. Poultry owners can keep disease away from their farms and backyard pens by keeping these areas clean and watching for signs of infectious poultry diseases such as AI, avian influenza. So I wanted to share that with everybody. If you have a clever name, you might want to name the mascot for the Biosecurity for Birds campaign. So I wanted to share that with everybody because you have until the 30th. And Sherlock Holmes actually, I think, came from one of our listeners and followers. So how about that? Very, very clever. If you have a clever name, then you can go and submit that, and you might just become famous. You never know. So, all righty, without further ado, we want to make sure you have your pen and paper ready because we're going to learn about something that a lot of us have never even heard of, and that's avian gout. And the person to come and tell us all about this is the expert himself, Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, founder of First State Vet Supply. Peter, thank you for joining us today.
Hey, Andy, how you doing? Hello, Pat.
We're doing great.
Hey, Peter, thank you so much for joining us. Boy, I want to hear about this avian gout. I didn't realize that I thought it was a people disease as you got older. You get your toes get sore, but tell us how it happens in chickens.
Yeah, it's an interesting disease, very similar to gout in humans. Basically, can be caused by the same problem over consumption of protein generally is what starts it. In chickens, it's also called toxic nephritis, and I'll break that down for you. The toxic part of it is the uric acid that's produced mainly in the liver,
mm-hmm.
and it's excreted mainly through the kidneys. And
right.
the nephritis part of it is an inflammation of the kidneys. So when too much protein is ingested by the birds, and the kidneys are not functioning properly, and it could be for a number of reasons, and we'll go into that in a minute. But then you get into this toxic nephritis situation, and then you get the urate buildup in the joints and or on the tissues of the body itself inside the bird, on the internal organs. So then that would lead you to look at birds in two ways, having two different forms of gout, one called the visceral form, where the urates actually deposit themselves on the internal organs. It looks like if you're opening up a bird that had the visceral form of gout, it would look like it had snowed inside the body cavity.
Wow.
It would be little flakes all over the internal organs, wherever the urates had set up shop and deposited themselves. In the articular form, which forms mainly in the joints, and this causes humongous swelling of the joints. You would almost think that your chickens had elephantitis, so to speak. But
mm-hmm.
this again is caused by the urates then depositing themselves right in the joints, and is probably painful. I know chickens don't experience pain quite the same way humans do, but just to look at it, if you see a picture of it, it'll make you flinch yourself. And
folks, ouch.
Yeah, folks would like
Peter,
to see I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, how do chickens experience pain that's different from people? I mean, they don't seem to have any expression, even when they do. I can't say that. But as far, I've seen chickens with wounds that I would probably commit suicide with, and they just have this look.
Yeah, I think that the ability to feel pain is somewhat diminished in relation to humans. I go back to when I was in the chicken slaughter class in college, and I was amazed by, you know, taking a bird and putting it upside down in the funnel and holding its head, and then just, we were taught to just make a small incision on both sides of the neck, just below the ears.
Yeah, that's how I was taught.
Yeah, I made those cuts, and it was kind of unnerving in a way because the bird just kind of looked at me like, this is a nice day, but how come I'm upside down? And I mean, it was bleeding out into the, you know, into the bleed out trough. All the food, all the blood was going in there, and it wasn't until the reaction of the bird and the brain not having enough oxygen and blood where the bird started to shake, and then you hold the head and you hold the feet until that stops. And but prior to that, I observed no what I would call pain. The bird just looked at me like it was an everyday thing, you know, and as it bled out. So I just don't think, I don't have that much experience with the pain end of it, other than having seen plenty of birds that were injured in one way, shape, or another, and they seem to blow it off. I mean, I've seen birds and have doctored birds that had their beaks literally ripped off, and they're still trying to eat.
Yeah.
You know, most of us, we get a, you know, bite the inside of your cheek, for God's sake, and you won't drink orange juice, and you won't eat anything acidic. And some people make a big deal out of it, others don't. But, you know, a chicken, I mean, with a beak ripped off makes a big difference. I mean, that has to be, in my opinion, painful, but they don't appear to be so. Every time we tried to fix it, they go back and try to beat off whatever you put on there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you would think that would be somewhat painful. So I don't believe that their ability, you know, I do believe they feel pain, don't get me wrong, but I don't think it's quite as exaggerated as it is in humans. And that's probably due to we have more nerves going to our fingers and our hands and stuff, because probably because of the dexterity of the limbs that we have, our feet and so on and forth.
That's a really good explanation of that, Peter. Thank you. And I interrupted you. You were going to talk about the urate.
Yeah, what I was going to say, if folks want to see a picture of the articular form of gout, I have a website, featherfanciers.com. It's www.featherfanciers.com. And you go there to the general forum, and when you get there, open it, and you'll see another forum says, "What's wrong with this chicken?" There's only four pictures there, but it's the picture number one, and it's highlighted, and when you blow it up, you'll see it real clear what the articular form of gout looks like, and that they can judge for themselves as to whether they think that might be painful or not. I know on a human it would be painful because the toes and the joints are all swollen and quite pronounced, from that from that standpoint. So once you see it, you'll understand it a whole lot better. But there's no one particular thing other than the excess protein in a bird's diet. This is one of the reasons why people who are rearing chickens should follow the normal progression from one type of feed to another as far as protein is concerned. The overuse of protein, overuse of treats that contain higher percentages of protein could lead to having problems with gout, problems with water. Birds that are not properly watered can cause them to have kidney failure or not be able to excrete the uric acid through the kidneys and therefore induce a case of gout, and that may be even unintentional, but it can happen. It does happen.
Peter, I've got a question. You say that too much protein, but like in humans, it's not all protein. The protein that's really high in purines that tend to trigger a gout attack is, and that's things like sardines and liver, and I mean, it's not the kind of things I would think we'd be feeding chickens. So is there a particular kind of protein that triggers a gout attack in chickens, or is it just too much of any kind of protein?
Basically, it's all kinds of protein. In mammals, the harmful substances that they have are converted by with the help of an enzyme called uricase. Chickens don't have that. So the uric acid is the byproduct of the metabolism of nitrogen from the feed that the birds have consumed. And again, I said it's mainly produced in the liver, eliminated via the kidneys. So they don't have quite the mechanisms that we do to help break this stuff down, other than the excretion through the kidneys. There are other things that can cause it. Excess vitamin D3 in the diet can cause it. Excess calcium.
Excess. What was it again, Peter? Which vitamin B?
Vitamin D3.
D3. Too much vitamin D can cause gout in chickens?
Because it's involved in the metabolism of calcium.
Oh, of course. Okay. Well, I feed my calcium. I feed my calcium extra chickens in the winter. I give my chickens extra vitamin D in the winter. But so that's something to keep in mind.
The excess protein, lack of sufficient vitamin A can also cause it. Lack of water and dehydration. And again, the dehydration goes back to the fact that the uric acid will start to build up in the body. If the kidneys are not functioning properly, you don't get the elimination of the uric acid. And as it starts to build up in the body, then it starts to go in different directions within the body, whether it settles down in the joints or whether it settles down on the visceral organs of the bird will depend primarily on how bad the elimination through the kidneys becomes.
Interesting. Well, can this affect little baby chicks or chicks in the shell as well?
Not to my knowledge. This seems to be something. This is one of the reasons why young birds, or pullets, so to speak, or birds that are real young, before they become sexually mature and start laying eggs, what we see there is they've been fed excess calcium, and no bird that has not started to lay eggs should be fed any extra calcium whatsoever.
Right.
The calcium that they get is generally contained in the feed. And once they get over 2.8, 2.9, 3% calcium in the feed, you start to get this problem with the toxicity in the kidneys from the excess calcium buildup.
Okay. So, there's a question in the chat room, Peter. It's from Terry Nick. It says, I give the chickens extra protein in the winter. Am I hurting them? And I got to add on to mine. I give my chickens extra protein in general, about somewhere between 22 to 26% is what I like to have them access to. Are we doing dire things to our flocks without knowing them?
At 26%, you're on the outer edge. I certainly wouldn't go beyond that. Most people, don't know the protein content of the things that they're feeding, but there is a formula. I've got it around here somewhere for figuring out. If you know the protein content of everything, you plug the numbers into the formula and know how many pounds of each thing you're feeding, you can come up with your gross protein for that particular group of items that you're going to feed.
Okay. Well, another question here, Peter. What about an all-insect diet? I mean, we've got these mealworm treats, and I know my chickens go for grasshoppers like it's the best thing next to ice cream. So what if they really have a high bug diet? Does that give them too much protein and a tendency to gout?
I don't think it will, providing once you get, over 26%, you start to look at problems. By 30%, you can almost be assured that there'll be some birds that will come down with gout, especially if there has been in the past or is at the present time any kind of problem associated with kidney function. And that's one of the things. And it depends on – that's why birds are given, oyster shell free choice. If their body needs it, they will take it as a general rule. They're not quite as smart as pigs will be. Pigs, you can put out four or five different ingredients, and they tend to eat just enough of each one to maintain their bodies the way they're supposed to. Chickens are not quite that smart, most of them anyway. They will find something they like, and they will end up gorging themselves on it, whether it be crickets, grasshoppers, or something like that. I don't think that you know, they're going to end up eating enough grasshoppers to make that much difference over and above the protein content of the feed that they're being fed.
Right. Well, even like pure meat is something like, and correct me if I'm wrong, Peter, I'm kind of shooting from the hip here, is about 19% protein. I mean, it's not that much, and bugs, I think, is right around the same. It's just the bugs have a better lipid-to-protein ratio. There's another question in the chat room, Peter. How common is gout in chickens?
Relatively common in broiler-type chickens, the heavier breeds.
Okay. So in broilers, it's more common. Okay.
Oh, yeah. More common than in the egg layers. You would see this in some of your faster growing birds. You might see it in some white rocks, birds that are being grown for 4-H, for the fair, for meat. You know, have this kind of thing. You also see other problems in those kind of birds by forcing them to grow faster than their genetics to a degree.
But yeah. So the heritage breeds then probably have a tendency not to have so much. I mean, I've never seen. I don't know if I've ever seen gout in a chicken or not. Come to think of it, would the heritage breeds, because they're slower growing, have a less of a tendency to have gout?
Probably would, because of the genetics as well. Okay, and the fact that most of them are not exposed to a lot of the things. Most people. You know, if you're letting them run loose in the backyard or you've got a big piece of land and they're out foraging all day long, that's about as close as it gets to being the environment that a chicken was meant to be in. Chickens were never meant to be cooped up.
Right.
That's why they have a
tendency. They agree with that.
Yeah, that's why they have a tendency to want to roost in the trees and all that kind of things. And some of the breeds over the years, they've probably lost that want to be up real high. Some have, some haven't. But we also have forgotten over the years that chickens are foragers. And you know, I can't prove this scientifically. I haven't studied this end of it, but I'm sure there is a mechanism within them that balances out what they eat and how they eat it and so on and how much of it. And for instance, the crop, and this is a little bit off subject, but the crop is just a holding tank. No digestion takes place in the crop whatsoever. That's why birds get crop bound. When people think they're doing a good thing, they go cut their grass and they throw it over the fence. And depending on the type of grass, if it's really coarse and stuff, it ends up, in some cases, stopping the crop up. It has a tendency to want to ball up in the crop, and then it won't pass through and that kind of stuff. So even grasshoppers, crickets, those kinds of things, pretty tough for them to break them down because there is no digestion takes place there. So all these little body parts that they suck down have to make their way through down to the proventriculus, which is actually the true stomach, which isn't much bigger than your thumb.
Right, but I thought the crop really broke down the chunks into smaller bits.
Breaks nothing, zero.
Really? So all those little the grits and everything in there doesn't do anything?
That's why I laugh myself silly when I read articles and go online to different forums and people will say that, you know, they want these stones to stay in the bird's crop. Not going to happen. It ends up in the gizzard, which is after the proventriculus.
Yes, of course, in the gizzard.
It's going to take place in the gizzard. The gizzard is very powerful.
No kidding.
I forget off the top of my head the amount of pressure that it can exert, but it can take a walnut and crush it. I mean, you'll never get it down the bird's throat, but I mean, and on the amount of pressure that the gizzard can exert on something, is pretty much equal to the amount of pressure that it would take to crush a walnut. So it's pretty strong.
Wow, the muscles when you go to cut them open.
And it doesn't happen until it gets there. And the grit, stones, or whatever the birds may eat, and this is another thing people might not know about the calcium, the oyster shell, it actually can be trapped and should be trapped in the gizzard and will just leach out into the bird's system.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm, yep, be absorbed by the bloodstream. So it isn't like you give them the grit and it just passes out the other end or whatever. It is generally held by the gizzard, you know, for that purpose, and it doesn't generally break it down, but it will break down the oyster shell quicker than a granite grit.
Mm-hmm. Okay. There's a couple more questions here in the chat room, Peter. One is your protein calculator formula.
Mm-hmm.
Is that on your website, or is there some way we can...
If people want to email me, I'll be glad to send it to them.
Okay, okay.
chickendr@firstaidvetsupply.com, and I will get that right out to them.
Okay, so email Peter for the protein calculator formula. And the other question is from Bard Rock, what are the visible signs of gout?
The visible signs of gout are going to be, for the visceral form at least, you will see it, the swelling of the joints, predominantly the digits of the toes, the lower portion of the shank right down through the foot. If anybody wants to go to that website and see it, you've got to log in and stuff, but it shouldn't take too long. But it's quite an interesting picture. But that would be the articular form of gout. The visceral form is caused by the crystallization of the urates that then becomes somewhat sticky and will end up sticking to the visceral organs of the birds.
Mm-hmm.
So symptoms that you might see from a bird that has this is, and here's the problem, these things mimic a lot of other diseases, but again, the unwillingness to move, the sluggishness, poor appearance, sleepy, overall lack of energy, you know, and you have to watch out that, you know, other diseases, a lot of those things mimic coccidiosis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, peritonitis, perihepatitis, which is a problem with the liver, pericarditis, which is a problem with the heart, infections around the heart and the heart sac, and all of those kind of things, in a sense, have to be ruled out. But if you've ever done a postmortem, once you open a bird up and you see, you'll know gout when you see it, because, like I said, it looks like it snowed inside the body cavity. There's these little white flakes all over the place. So it's, you know, the symptoms for the articular gout, obviously a lot more pronounced, lameness, severe swelling we would see in the joints. And this particular form of gout needs to be differentiated between the Mycoplasma synoviae. Mycoplasma synoviae is a cousin to the Mycoplasma gallisepticum. By itself, generally, it doesn't cause a problem. Can be in birds for many, many years without showing itself. You can test birds, they test positive, but you don't see anything. But one of the things it does, it has a penchant or a habit of settling down in the synovial fluids in the joints, the Mycoplasma synoviae does, and it can cause severe swelling in the joints, and those joints would be hot as well. So it is an interesting disease. I don't believe it to be a big problem in laying hens, but we do see this in the meat-type birds quite a bit. The broiler industry we'll have some problems with it as well. One of the other things that can also lead to problems with gout is a high sodium intake. And I harp on this a lot, and if I've said it before, I'll say it again. Feeding cat food and dog food to dogs, to chickens, should be avoided except in very, very small quantities.
Okay.
The high salt content in both of them, especially cat food. Cat food's quite high. You know, leads to other problems besides the gout. Ascites being one of them, which is a lot of people would know it as water belly, but it also leads to right ventricular heart failure in birds, and can be overcome if the heart damage isn't too bad. We generally can use Lasix to keep birds going, or just plain drain the body cavity like you drain a swimming pool. So,
Peter, did you just say you can use Lasix in birds to help them increase their urine output?
Absolutely, yeah.
I didn't know that either.
Yep. Works very well.
And how do you give it to them? You just pop it in the morning? So.
Yeah, usually it's an injection once a day as a general rule.
And how do you give it to them? As a liquid, or just crush a little tablet down their throat? Or
It's an injectable. Off the top of my head.
Injectable. Okay.
Yeah.
Like what they give to horses.
Exactly. I don't see why you couldn't give it orally. I don't think it would make much difference. But generally, it's an injection. If my memory serves me correctly, it's intramuscular. Small dose. Can't remember I've got it in my files here somewhere. I keep it, but it's probably about a quarter of a cc the dose. And it works. We've had tremendous success with that. Again, the water deprivation, overuse of copper sulfate, not that copper sulfate is so bad, but people don't realize how much or how little to put in.
Mm-hmm.
Copper sulfate should really never be given over a quarter of a teaspoon per gallon of water. If you get the content of copper sulfate too high in the water, then the birds will refuse to drink it, and you might not realize it, and that can throw them into a dehydration situation. And if you're on a high-protein diet, let's say 26-28%, it could cause a problem, depending on how long they went without water.
Okay. Wow. There's another question here in the chat room, Peter. Mm-hmm. It's from Terry. Is what really is considered a small quantity of cat food for chickens or for hens if you want to boost their protein without causing any kidney damage?
Find something else to boost their protein. You don't need cat food and dog food. People do it because it's relatively inexpensive compared to chicken feed. But,
okay, and what's something else that you would recommend?
It shouldn't be used, more so than a treat type thing. Couple, three pieces a day per bird, or something like that. Or a lot of folks will sit on a porch and a bird will come up, and you want to give them a treat. And if you feel like you've got to give them the dog food or cat food, just a piece given to them, let them take it and run away with it. A better choice to give them, if you want to give them a treat, would be some of the mealworms and limit them as well. But, a piece of melon, piece of grape, piece of apple, piece of banana, anything like that is, in my opinion, much better. There are a lot of things you can get. You can get, you want to give them more protein in their food. You can use fish meal.
Mm-hmm.
You can give about a tablespoon per day per bird of cooked liver. Or cooked hamburger meat and those kind of things. You can add fat to their diet, save the fat from when you've cooked a roast or something and sprinkle it over top of their chicken feed.
Peter, my chickens love steak tartare, I must admit. If they're going to go for hamburger, they'll just gobble it down raw. And I mean, I've never had a problem with having any complaints or diarrhea or anything using mm-hmm. that, but just they do like, and that's one of, and when you read the old agriculture text, they talk a lot about feeding the meat scraps to boost the protein, especially in turkeys, but also chickens.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. It back when it was allowed before the mad cow deal, meat scraps were readily used in commercial poultry because it was a byproduct that was readily available and wasn't overly expensive. But I believe that ban is still in place. I don't think they're allowed to use it, at least not willy nilly anyway. But,
so do you think there's a problem with, like, prions in raw meat to give to chickens and we get mad chicken disease? I mean, I guess that's possible, but feed chicken.
Yeah, other than in mad cow, you'll never hear about it, but it happens in sheep, it happens in chickens, it happens in pigeons. They're just not going to tell you all the things that you probably, and again, this is a little bit off topic, but we got probably a couple of minutes we can spend on this, but you haven't heard a whole lot about avian influenza lately, have you?
No.
No, because around the world, not just this country, but around the world, they realize now that by beating their chests about avian influenza being in everybody's backyard, that it's costing them money. Because the first time somebody says that they found it in their country somewhere, nobody wants to buy their chicken, even if it isn't in their chickens. But the latest case is, the latest cases, and you can look it up, they've been in Saudi Arabia and places like that. but it's all kind of hush-hush. But I've got a couple of places where I go that I get all this kind of news that other people don't necessarily get. And it's out there. It's alive and well. It's just not the big deal that everybody thought it was. You know, it's still dangerous. There isn't any question about that. But it's ubiquitous. It's in everywhere in nature. It's just when it recombines itself into one of the more virulent strains, that's when you have problems. But it's out there every day. If you want to go out and take information from or blood from or cloacal swabbings from ducks all over the place, you'll find it. It's there.
Oh, that's just what I want to do.
It's all part of the deal. But you know, there's some, and I haven't written about this yet. I write for a magazine, and I write an article in there. What I do is I take other people's articles that they put out information on, and I just cut and paste it. It's just a thing that way I don't have to take a lot of time and to give them all the credit for it. And I might add a little bit of verbiage to it at the end. But, what they found is that a lot of these ducks and stuff will have the avian influenza virus living on their feathers. And they found this out because in Asia, people who were working on ducks that were being euthanized and then defeathered for eating purposes came down with avian influenza. And they couldn't figure out why. And when they went back and they did all of the research work on it, they found that it's on the feathers. So, so you have a bird that's molting and has it, and they can leave it anywhere. So it is what you want to make it. I mean, if you want to go and look at the salmonella thing, you know, I think it's interesting. We talked about that the last time I was on. And, you don't really hear much about it in the news. But if you go back and you look, they knew that this place had a problem all the way back in 2008.
And didn't do anything about it.
No, they didn't do a darn thing about it. They knew it was there.
A billion and a half eggs later, it's the best thing that could have had to happen to the farmers' markets and egg sales, at least in my county.
I mean, it's just that, you know, the failure to act it showed itself here. And because they didn't act on something that they knew, and the company itself wasn't following its own protocol set up to catch this stuff. And, so it's all part of it. And it all boils down to dollars and cents and money. And it's like the old thing, if you want to know the truth of the story, follow the money trail.
Yeah.
That's generally, generally what you'll see. But one other thing, a couple other things here on this gout issue. The overuse of antibiotics can also cause this, and I'll explain. Any damage done to the kidneys is going to lead to this problem, possibly with gout. And
well, that's why the broilers have it. Maybe. I mean, I know they're not supposed to.
Sometimes. Sometimes it's poor management in these. The broiler companies, the companies that actually own the chickens, do not own the chicken houses. They're all contracted by farmers who have these houses. And it depends on how well they take care of the chickens as to how well the chickens will come out the other end of the chicken house.
Yeah, okay. Peter, we're just about ready for a commercial break, but we're not going to do the trivia question today, so we have a little extra time at the end, and I've got a couple more questions from the chat room. So why don't we just take a pause here, and when we come back, we'll continue on with antibiotics and how it might be able to cause gout in chickens. Okay. Whisper, take it away.
EggCartons.com, your discount supplier of egg cartons and poultry supplies. They carry a wide variety of egg cartons in paper, plastic, and foam, as well as a great selection of poultry supplies, including incubators, brooders, waterers, feeders, and more. Order online at EggCartons.com or call toll-free 1-888-852-5340. Free full-color catalog available. Be sure to sign up for their online newsletter for more great specials. That's eggcartons.com.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937.
Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com. That's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Designed for starting and growing game birds, turkeys, ducks, geese, and broilers, MannaPro's Game Bird Showbird Crumbles feature 24% protein and a combination of vitamins, minerals, and yeast culture. This complete feed does it all, from growth and weight gain to healthy development and even improved digestion. So next time you're starting some new birds, try MannaPro's Game Bird Showbird formula and see the difference. When you need an incubator, think Brinsea, the incubation specialists. Brinsea has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. They have incubators that hold anywhere from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. These durable, easy-to-clean, quality products come with a 2-year warranty and are the choice of backyard breeders through research establishments. Visit them online at Brinsea.com. Brinsea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brinsea.com, or call 1-888-667-7009. And don't miss out on Brinsea's September sale. Until the end of the month, you can save 20% or more on their full range of incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brinsea. Technology you can trust.
Actually, in reality, I am Super Chicken!
All righty, we're back live on the show with Peter Brown. He's the chicken doctor from First State Vet Supply. Peter, are you on the line here?
I am.
Okay, good. Well, there's a couple random questions here in the chat room. Why don't we go with those and then come back to about antibiotics in the
sure.
flock? And we've got probably about 10 minutes to go here. So, one of the questions was: is a chicken in pain when it has gout? And I know we talked about pain earlier, how they don't seem to express it, but And I've never seen that I've never seen that I know of a chicken with gout. So if their joints are swollen and that, do they, is it noticeable that you can sort of pick them out just by seeing them?
From the ones that I've seen some fairly severe cases of it. There doesn't appear to be any outright pain, but I can't.
Are they gimpy?
I can't definitively say, you know, that they do or they don't. I've not seen any research anywhere published on that. But my guess, as a person who's been doing this a long time, my guess would be there must be some, because there is the inability and unwantingness to move, the standing around type thing. And normally when most birds are scurrying around, a lot of them you couldn't pick them up if you wanted to, and then all of a sudden they're just,
you can catch them.
Yeah, you can catch them. You can drop kick them like a football. I mean you know, they just don't want to do anything.
Did you say drop kick them like a football? Oh, dear. No, cancel that.
It's a term I use to get my point across, but certainly wouldn't do that. But the point is they don't move. So my contention is that there's one or two things going on that's either painful to do so, or the buildup of the urates within the joints is keeping them from moving, or a combination of the both. And I probably think a combination of both of those things.
Okay. Well, the other question that was in the chat room is about the snacks, and they want to know about raisins. Is it okay to feed your chickens raisins because they like that?
Yeah, I don't see it being a problem.
Yeah, I don't either. I mean,
it's more carbohydrate than it is protein. There may be some protein in it, but not very much. But
they do prefer them soaked in whiskey, I understand, or bourbon. That way you can drop kick them easier, and they'll go farther. No, just kidding, everybody. That's totally not true. Oh, Lord.
That may be.
That may be. Okay.
Getting back to the situation where the antibiotics, use of sulfa drugs, Sulmet, sulfoquinoxalin, when it used to be on the market, I think it's off the market now, I haven't seen it around lately. But
what is it? Sulfamethoxazole?
Sulmet and sulfoquinoxalin.
But that's not Bactrim. That's but it's a sulfa drug.
They're both sulfa drugs, and
okay.
The problem with them is, and if you'll notice, anybody that's used these particular products, the sulfoquinoxalin being a big problem here, because you can't use it like you can Sulmet. So if you, let's say you had a bottle of Sulmet and you look at the directions, it says used 5 days or whatever, and then you got a bottle of sulfoquinoxalin and you say to yourself, well, yeah, well, it's sulfa drug, I'll just go ahead and use it the same way, you would probably end up doing some damage to your bird's kidneys, because the sulfoquinoxalin is so toxic that you don't give it for 5 days. You usually give it for two, no more than 3 days, then skip 2 to 3 days with just fresh water, and then come back with 2 days additional sulfoquinoxalin. So if you were to give it 5 days in a row, you may or may not, depending on how much the birds consume and so on, you may do some kidney damage.
Okay.
You know, then again, we get into a problem with kidneys not functioning right, then we get a backup of the uric acid, and we start getting into a possible gout situation. And sometimes a bird may die and may have gout. You don't see it because it's the visceral form, and they just end up dying. And if you don't do a post-mortem on them, that's why I encourage everybody to learn how to do it. It's not hard. You know, every bird that dies on your place every day should perform a post-mortem so you know what's going on. But
a daunting thought. But I'm glad not many of mine die. One more question here, Peter. If one of your flock has gout, should you put them down or should you try to treat them? And we talked about the treatment being more water and even Lasix, a diuretic.
Yeah, I'll get into that in just a second. I can answer that question. The other medication that would be a problem definitely would be gentamicin.
Okay, gentamicin, really?
Gentamicin exerts an awful amount of pressure on the kidneys and can cause severe kidney problems, not only in chickens, but in every other species of animal that I know of that it's used in. So it's used with caution and care.
Really?
Yeah, so we don't run out of time here. I'll go over these quickly. The other one is mycotoxins. These are from contaminated feed. They can and do cause kidney damage and, again, could possibly lead to a gout situation. Mycotoxins are generally naturally occurring funguses that grow on feedstuffs in the field. You can't see it on your feed, but it can be contaminated. So that's one of the other things besides the other items, the high protein diet, the gentamicin, the sulfa drugs, the mycotoxins, the deficiencies of vitamin A, the overuse of possibly of copper sulfate, water deprivation, vitamin D3 levels being too high. And that's another reason why you shouldn't give vitamins electrolytes every day, even in a hot weather. We will be carrying next year for the hot weather just an electrolyte package, just sodium and potassium, and you can use a little bit of it every day to help a bird retain water. And
okay. So it really, really boils down to the kidneys and being able to clear out that the purines, and then
right.
because of course chickens can't, they don't urinate, so you got to get those urates out of there somehow.
Right. What I would do is I would take them off their feed immediately once I felt that I had a problem with it, and I would probably put them on either a scratch diet or a corn, just whole corn or a cracked corn diet, and do that for 4 or 5 days and see if that helps. Fresh water. Sometimes you can...
you said put them on a high corn diet to get the protein way down, which is...
Just all corn, because corn's low in protein, and they won't have as much trouble getting the uric acid out of the system. You can acidify the water, 8 to 10 cc's of apple cider vinegar per gallon of drinking water for a day or two to help acidify the urine and move it out. May also help. One other thing before we get off the line here, if you've been vaccinating birds, especially with infectious bronchitis virus, you may want to take another look at that, because different strains of infectious bronchitis have been known to cause kidney damage. And so you might want to take a look at that if you are doing that, and reevaluate where you are and see what type you're using and so on and so forth. So,
do you recommend putting some a little bit of apple cider vinegar in the water then, just as a routine to help the kidneys kind of do the clearing? And
it wouldn't hurt. I don't believe in apple cider vinegar being the cure-all to everything, but it never hurts to try something like that. It is actually what I would say benign. And most of the time, when you're looking at what apple cider vinegar can do, it's basically going to change the pH of the intestine, making it tougher for organisms to live there that don't naturally belong there. The problem is, once you stop using it, then things go back the other way very quickly. For instance, real quick, when they were talking years ago about irradiating poultry to get rid of all of the organisms that are on the carcass that may cause human problems, they did a study and they found out that, yeah, it worked great, killed everything on the carcass. It was pure, clean. When you brought it home and then you contaminated it, the bad guys outgrew the good guys because there were no good guys to keep them in check. And
okay.
That's how it works. And so the same thing happens in the gut. If you were to constantly use these things, you should always follow up with a probiotic. Always.
Good for you. I mean, you and I both fully applaud that. I agree with the use of probiotics. It's just, I take them every day and I'm perfectly healthy. But, Yeah, they can't hurt. That's exactly right, Peter. It can't hurt. Peter, we've still got a couple of minutes. We've got about 3 minutes. You want to just say a little bit about maybe probiotics and how it might help to keep the chickens in balance and keep gout away?
Yeah, well, the probiotics, the main actor in the probiotics is Lactobacillus acidophilus. Don't let the big name throw you. You just want to make sure that when you buy one that it includes that. It's the main player in it, and what it does is it does basically two things. It attaches itself to the gut wall, or it competes for space on the gut wall, like other bacteria that attach themselves to the gut wall do, and it excretes acid. Again, going back and doing this and making the pH of the gut undesirable for those organisms that want to live there and set up shop. So that's what it does. The use of it every day should not hurt a bird in any way, shape, or form. It's a benign bacteria. They're bacteria that belong there. And it just keeps what we call good gut health. And what the only thing about it is when you use, for whatever reason you may, a drug of any kind, the drugs become chemotherapeutic, meaning they kill everything in sight, including your probiotic product, and you have to go back afterward, usually 24 hours after you cease giving the antibiotic, and go back to the probiotic. And it can ward off a lot of things that are in a bird's environment, keep them healthy.
Yeah, and same thing with the human environment. In fact, any animals, I think. I mean, yep. And there's bunches of probiotics, too. There's a lot of different strains. It's just not the Lactobacillus. It is in yogurt, but there's hundreds
generally,
of them. There are conferences now
other,
on
generally
probiotics.
Generally, the other ones are a supporting cast for the Lactobacillus acidophilus, okay? They are not necessarily going to do a whole lot for the gut itself, but they're there to, so to speak, protect the Lactobacillus acidophilus itself. And I can't remember the name of them off the top of my head, but I have written an article about it, and if anybody wants that article, all they have to do is email me. I'd be glad to send it to them.
Oh, I'd like to have it, yeah. Well, quick question from the chat room. We've got about 30 seconds. Did you give your probiotics as a powder, gel, or capsules, or yogurt?
The easiest way to do it is to do it in the drinking water. And we buy ours from one of the oldest probiotic manufacturers in the country, Charles Hansen. And we buy it in bulk and break it down into one-pound containers. And, it's got a very high, what they call a PFU count. That means a plaque-forming unit, and that's when they decide how much bacteria is actually in this stuff on a live basis. They put it on a growth media, grow it, and they look at it under a microscope that's got a grid on it, and they count all the bacteria there, and then they have a method for multiplying that out. And it tells
them. Okay, well, great. Peter, that's been really, really, really helpful. We need to sign off here. We've got just a little bit going, but... we've been talking with Peter Brown. Peter, thank you so much. He's the chicken doctor. And his website is firststateveterinary.com. So thank you again, Peter.
FirstStateVetSupply.com.
FirstStateVetSupply.com. Posted on the chat room here. Okay, Whisper, are you there?
We are here, absolutely. Thank you very much, Peter, for another wonderful show. And I'm sure lots and lots of notes were taken today during today's show. Peter's going to be joining us. It's a five Wednesday month. And so Peter is going to be joining us next Wednesday. We're going to be talking all about rodent control. That's next Wednesday. Peter will be back since it's five Wednesdays this month. So he'll be joining us and talking about rodent control next month. Next week. Tomorrow, we want you to tune in again to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer right here on Blog Talk Radio. We'll be welcoming Richard Frudenberger, publisher and technical writer with Back Home Magazine. That'll be tomorrow. And then another great fun Friday, this Friday, we'll be giving away some more great prizes from all of our sponsors. So it's great to be back. I missed you all, and we are here to stay and stay on track so we don't have to postpone the show any longer to get caught up. So thank you all for all of our listeners, all of our sponsors. Of course, my wonderful co-host, Pat Foreman, as always, thank you. And take it away.
Okay. Well, yeah, it is good to be back. I missed it quite a bit. So again, of course, Peter Brown of First State Vet Supply. Thank you so much for bringing your expertise information on. It's really always. I take notes like crazy. I've got a whole bunch of them. Andy Schneider, thank you for bringing us all together as the Chicken Whisperer. Without you, we wouldn't be here, of course. And of course, thanks to the chat room chickeneers for clucking along and all their antics in the background and all the great questions today. Really good job, you guys. Thanks to blogtalkradio.com for providing the radio, chat, and video services. Blessings to all, and welcome back, and may the flock be with you evermore. God bless, everybody.